This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
Carolyn's area of expertise lies in transforming amateur mindsets into a professional outlook, a crucial aspect in the game of life. Why does she call it the game of life? Because just like any game, life has a beginning and an end. There are rules to be observed if we want to stay in the game. There are winners and losers. It's not about our worth, it's about our skills. We can always improve at it. We don't have full control over the outcome, but we do over the process. It's got to be fun. On this podcast interview, Carolyn's intentions is not to tout her coaching services, but to unveil as many of her 50 principles of living life as a pro. Carolyn firmly believes that even embracing a single principle from her handbook can steer you towards a more powerful and purposeful life. Valeria interviews Carolyn Mabubi. She is a distinguished life and leadership coach who works with some of the most extraordinary and interesting people in the world. Armed with over four decades of leadership and entrepreneurial prowess, she empowers her clients, both young and not so young adults, to seize the reins of their lives, families, and businesses, and lead with radical responsibility. Meet Carolyn at carolynmabubi.com. Here's the interview with Carolyn Mabubi.
In your own words, who is Carolyn Mabubi?
Valeria, if I may, Carolyn Mabubi is a creator. She's a manifester. She's somebody who, after many decades, has come into her own to understand the power that we, especially as women in the second half of life, have at our disposal to manifest and to share with others. That is who I am.
Wow. Yes, I love to hear that, that you came to this understanding, to this perspective, to this perception, really, of life, of yourself and others in this world that we inhabit. If we do, really, that would be another podcast conversation. But talk to me for a moment, based on what you, the way you answered that question. Why is that most of us, especially women, as you said too, why does it take too long for us to come to this deeper understanding of ourselves and to live our own path, our own truth? I would love to hear more about that.
I think it's because, honestly, since we are so young, we are taught or told or modeled, you know, what we see modeled in front of us is how to be a good woman, how to be a good wife, a good daughter, a good sister, a good mother, you know, a good employee. And in this process of wanting to be sort of the good thing for the world, Valeria, we divide ourselves instead of instead of protecting the identity with which we are born and then, you know, expanding that identity, we instead divide it into pieces and we show up one way with our friends, another way with our family, another way at work, another way with our children. And the cognitive and emotional and psychological load of living this way It's too heavy.
Right.
And for most of us, once we hit our early 40s, we can't, it's like keeping all the balls, the plastic balls under the water, right?
Yeah.
Soon one of them is going to, you're not going to be able to keep all of them under the water all the time. Soon one of them is going to pop up and, you know, it begins, the havoc begins from there. So that is why I think that what I've seen, my experience is women starting in their early 40s, sometimes late 30s, and sometimes not until their 50s, start to want to become whole again, to pull back, to claw back all these different identities they've created. And they ask themselves in that moment, well, who am I? Who am I really?
Yes, it is so, so true. And it feels like it's unavoidable, isn't it? Inevitable. That we can't really, for some reason, given these structures that we are born into, familiar and societal, we are not able to develop or hold on to this sense of identity that you spoke of, that we are born with, which is wholeness to me. You've been alluring to that. So yes, a billion times to that, you know, to return to that wholeness. But I wonder if we actually had that choice when we were born. Like now, if I can really honestly say, I don't feel like I had a choice to be whole, feel whole for so long.
Yeah, I hear you. And, you know, no, this is not against parents. I'm a parent of two young adults myself. The only mitigation that we have, Valeria, is the work that we do on ourselves and the work that we do on ourselves before we become parents. Because the more conscious we are of this, you know, this truth, I would say, this practice that takes place when children are born, the better we are able to manage it and not to be, you know, just on a default mode, raising our kids in the same exact way that we were raised.
Right. So true. So I have too many questions now based on what you said. So the idea of a good person, a good woman, a good wife, a good, you just kind of gave me a lot of examples here. So what would be the alternative to it within the this wholeness concept model? Would you say authentic or...
It is. It is authentic, though. That's a good word, although it's so overused these days I hesitate to use it. Mm. The alternative is whatever is the opposite of performance, whatever is the opposite of people pleasing, whatever is the opposite of living for approval. Right. So it would be. It would be raising our children and reparenting ourselves to approve of ourselves. Mm. This doesn't mean, you know, you're going to be a horrible person to others, but also it doesn't mean that you have to change who you are, depending on the context and depending on your role, in order to fill some prerequisite of what you've been told. Right. For example, a good mother is always available to her children.
Right.
No, I mean, nobody's always available to everyone.
Right.
So, you know, we create this belief and pass it down and pass it around. And then young mothers right off the bat are overwhelmed and spend decades feeling, especially young working mothers, or old working mothers, you know, feeling shameful and guilty because, no, they are not always available. And the truth is, you could be a great mother and not be always available for your child.
Right, right. Wow, that's beautifully said. That's really wonderful for all of us to hear, not just mothers, but all of us. So going back to the, let's say, to the basics, I wanted to clarify that because a lot of people, including myself, have some, let's say, it's a challenge to really picture, to really know what it feels like and what it is like to be whole again, or to be in touch with the wholeness that you've been talking about. So I would love for you to give us a picture of that. What does it feel like? What does it look like on a daily basis, on a moment-to-moment basis?
Oh, wow. So I'm glad you asked, what does it feel like? Because that's a great place to start. Right. Anytime we have a goal that feels very abstract, right? Like you're saying, Carolyn, this goal of feeling whole, mm-hmm. of reuniting my identity feels very abstract to me. Can you make it real to me?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anytime you have a goal that feels abstract, ask yourself, how do I want to feel? Mm. Make the feeling of that goal the actual goal.
Right.
Mm. And I can tell you that the feeling of wholeness, the feeling of being the same person, regardless of the circumstances,
yeah.
is ease. Now, it's not easy. That doesn't mean your life is going to be easy.
Right.
But it means that you will have this internal sense of ease
right.
that you carry with yourself, a sense of peace, a sense of just being okay, you know, that you carry with yourself throughout the day, regardless of what is going on
yes.
in your circumstances, in the outside world.
Mm. Wow. That's a beautiful reference. Yes,
the opposite of that, which is what most of us have, you know, are living through, is a feeling of dis-ease.
Yeah.
So disease in the body, but also dis-ease in your soul, in your psyche, in, you know, emotionally. And it shows up as rumination.
Mm-hmm.
It shows up as self-doubt. It shows up as resentment, because you're, you know, we're running around hustling and people pleasing, and it feels like an endless cycle. So it's about removing these obstacles. And this is really what good coaches do. Good transformational coaches, they're not working to come up with a new diet for you, or here's six steps to, you know, here's six steps to living life with more ease. No, no, no. It's deep work that has the coach understanding, okay, here are the three ways that this person is holding herself back from experiencing ease. Here is three ways in which she, when faced with a certain circumstance, divides herself. She abandons herself. Right?
Yeah.
And then the coach will work with the client, and it's not in one session. It takes some work to change those habits, to let go of the negative habits, because rumination, people pleasing, all of these things are habits. They look like personality traits.
Yeah.
They're not. They're just practices. It's something we've done so often that now we think it's who we are.
Right. Right. Wow. Yes. Yes. That really resonates with me. Resonates true. I love the, you know, the, what we talk about feelings, the feeling of wholeness. I was just contemplating here this, this idea. It's just beautiful. The feeling of wholeness. So, the ease, peace. Yes. Yeah. And to me, really, let's say my reference is always a spiritual one, which everything really is spiritual to me. But when it comes to, kind of having a conversation about spiritual concepts and ideas, that's what I think about, right? It's when, if I can put words to it, it's feeling that I am already what I'm looking for. So there's nothing missing, nothing lacking. And it is almost, it becomes instantly that place, that space of peace within myself, body, mind. It's amazing how quick, how how instantaneous it is to have that feeling. But it is a practice, you're right. And with that in mind, Carolyn, I'm curious to know, what inspired you to become a master certified life and leadership coach?
So Valeria, I, like you, you and I were talking before you started the podcast, like you, it feels like we've been doing this work all our lives, right?
Yes. Yes.
So if you're a seeker, you're a seeker. If you are fascinated with the human condition, you were likely fascinated from the time you were 2 years old. Yes. I can see it when I look at pictures of myself playing with flowers in our garden for 7-8 hours a day when I was 4 or 5 years old, right? The word spiritual was not known to me at 4 years old, but that is what a four-year-old is doing if she is alone in nature for that long, right?
Yes.
So for me, just like I was saying, I went in the direction, professionally speaking, I went in a direction that I felt was what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I was an executive in the fashion business for over 3 decades. So I was a leader and in that world. And then, in that period of time, I also became a parent and realized, my God, leading these two human beings is so much harder than leading, hundreds of people in a company.
Yes.
And throughout my fascination with leadership and what makes leaders powerful really grew. Now, like so many women, again, I reached a point in my mid-40s where I realized that I was not, how I was living the first half of my life was not how I wanted to just continue by default through the second half. I started really questioning, well, what do I want to create? Mm-hmm. And the answer was something different, certainly, than what you've been doing. I mean, Valeria, I just didn't want to be in fashion anymore. Right. But what I loved about it, and what the line is going back to my childhood, it was the relationships and the being of service, being in a position where I'm really able to deeply serve my clients. And one day I was at my child's school for a cross-country event. And I don't know if you've been to these, but it's very like boring for the parents. You just stand there and then like your kid runs by and, you wave at them. And of course they're teenagers, so they roll their eyes at you and you're thinking to yourself, why am I even here? I was one of those for my son. And rather than really be there to do that, I started a deep conversation with another parent who needed help, really, to gain some clarity. And we spoke for a while. Afterwards, my son asked me, he said, Mom, where were you? And I said, well, I was talking to Jonathan's mom. She needed someone to talk to understand her thoughts, to figure out what to do next. She's having some tough times and some obstacles in her life. And, he said, Mom, that's what all you do. That's all you do all the time. Yeah. I said, I know, Adam, I wish I could. Mm-hmm. I wish it could be my life. I wish I could make a living and support our family through this work. Yeah. And this 11-year-old looked at me, or 12-year-old looked at me, and he said, you can, Mom. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how? Yeah. And this was already a long time ago. Right. He said, oh, you can be a coach. Valeria, I had no idea what a coach was.
Yeah.
15 years ago. Or 12 years ago. I went home, I Googled life coach.
Yes.
And that was the beginning of this new career that has, of course, been transformative for myself and everyone around me.
How wonderful. What a beautiful story, too. Yes. So it is the work of guiding others, as you felt guided, from what I see too. And the interesting thing that we believe that something else is guiding us, but it's really our own inner wisdom. It's because we're in touch with it. And then it seems like that passes on will reflect back to others. I really have been kind of have experienced that, and I've seen that. I mean, the word I use is reflection. It's just the more in touch with we are with our own selves and our own wisdom. I mean, it just happens. Other people will, let's say, in an easy way, in a very effortless way, kind of open up to that space as well within themselves. And I guess they some of them mistaken that with being guided by others, but actually it's their own inner wisdom guiding them, their own truth. So you're just serving as a pointer, as somebody who's just showing them their own truth, which I love. I love that about coaching. Is that really what it is, Caroline, from your perspective?
Honestly, you hit the nail so on the head. And if I can pull on that string, one of my pet peeves about coaching is people's perception of coaching. Yeah. Is a lot of people think that a coach knows more than I do, than you do, or is smarter than you, or somehow has all the answers. And that couldn't be further from the truth, because a really good coach is somebody who slows down and slows you down and is able to hold masterful space for you to access your own higher wisdom.
Yes.
Not my higher wisdom, but your own. And that's one of the differences between coaching and consulting. So if you want consulting, there are consultants out there who are quote unquote experts at what they do. And you know, you should go to them. But coaching is really exactly about what you were saying. How do you access your own higher wisdom? It's not easy. It's not easy to do that alone. And you use the word reflection. And of course, I mean, people reflect in different ways. But I have found there's only two ways to do it deeply, to do it to the level of really accessing your highest wisdom. And one is through writing. You know, I don't know who it was who said writing is the doing part of thinking. So, you know, as you write, you're sort of operationalizing your thinking, you know, you're clarifying, you're hearing what is in your brain and in your mind. And the other is through conversation.
Yes.
This is why conversations, you know, whether you're in a group coaching or one-on-one, or you have a teacher or a guru or somebody who is really there for you to have a deep conversation with no agenda. This is the problem with talking to our mothers and sisters and kids.
Yes.
You know, they love us to death, but everybody, if they're related to you, and even your friends, have an agenda. They have their own thoughts and feelings about what's right for you. And that will inevitably get in the way of you hearing the voice of your own higher wisdom. Does that make sense, Valeria?
Yes, very much does. Absolutely. Yes, yes. And you said it's slowing down. Yeah, that's one thing. So true. And being able to access your own wisdom is not something that's easy. And I often wonder why, too. Is that because we have to go through also the process of healing, let's say, traumas and energetic blockages, even, I don't know, memories, some memories that keep coming back. Is that really, do you also do this work, Caroline, in a way?
I'm not a therapist or a trauma specialist, so I don't do that work. But most of my clients are also doing that work. Because to your point, it's, you know, this kind of growth and expansion that we are talking about, this kind of creating your conscious identity or your identity deliberately and consciously. Of course, you have to look at what got you here. But one of the, again, another pet peeve I have is people in the human potential field, people like me and you that love this work, a lot of us will we'll go to the why and we'll find out, become so self-aware of why we do what we do, but then we don't take action to get past it and to create a new life for ourselves. And, you know, we discuss it, we talk about it, we go to more experts, we meditate more, we learn more, but our life doesn't change. And that's what coaching did for me. By when I hired a coach, I was really able to actually change my life. And that's what why I respect this profession so much.
Yes, me too. It's truly, truly powerful and empowering. Yes, I have had coaches myself and I talk to them all the time here. It's in some of my friends are coaches. So it's really amazing to be in their presence. In your presence now, it feels that way.
Thank you, Valeria.
Yeah, it's like being in the presence of a best friend, like a dear best friend. And I often say, talk this way about therapists too. Not all of them, some of them. They're just so amazing in the sense of being open, giving space, healing, a safe space to what's healed and needs to be expressed that's about to be revealed. So, I mean, you people are just incredible. Thank you. Thank you, Carolyn, for doing what you do, for being open to life.
My pleasure. Thank you for acknowledging it.
So I do have more questions for you, technical questions, I would say. Yes, within the topic of the power of creating a conscious identity, you speak of, you say powerful coaching happens on three distinct but beautifully integrated levels: identity, mindset, and strategies and tactics. So I would love to hear a bit more about identity. We have been discussing about this idea of wholeness that for some people feels either abstract or something that they think that they know. But as you just mentioned, they are not really living the life that they wish to be living, with more peace, at ease, in harmony, and happiness, and all that goodness. So talk to me about the other two levels, so mindset and strategies. I know you work with all three levels, on all three levels. Do you start with identity or you start with mindset and strategies?
So let me explain a little bit about each one.
Yeah.
And then I'll answer your question about where to start. So most people go to coaching because they want strategies and tactics. Tell me what to do about this. Tell me what to do about that. You know, tell me how to have this conversation with my son. Let's take that as an example. You have a client has a difficult relationship with their son and they come to coaching because they want to improve that relationship. Almost always they want strategies and tactics for having a different kind of conversation than they're having. Do this, don't do that. Say this, don't say that. Don't say but, say and instead of but, things like that. And and that's all good. That's all good. And there's a place for strategies and tactics. But the problem is that's not where the main issue emanates from. You know, if you don't resolve the reason why there is a problem with your son, it doesn't matter that your strategies and tactics work this time. Over time, it's not going to work. So we always want to go to the heart of what is the core cause, the main cause. One step above strategies and tactics is mindset. Mindset, Valeria, I'm sure you're super familiar with, is how do you think about the world? How do you see the world? What are the filters through which you see the world? Why is somebody looking at the weather today in California where I am and seeing it as beautiful and another person looks at exactly the same weather, same temperature, same light and says, oh, it's awful. That's because of our mindset. Our mindset is created from our beliefs throughout the years. What we have come to believe is true. And believe is the truth. It's not the truth, but we have made true for ourselves. So a good coach will go one level higher than strategies and tactics and understand by listening really forensically, very, very closely and asking powerful questions. What is happening in the mind of this person? What is leading them to have these emotions that is getting in the way, the emotions that turn into actions, that is getting in the way of her relationship with her son? And then one level above that, Valeria, is your identity, which is, who are you being? Mm. It's true that we spoke about wholeness being a main contributor of having a conscious identity, but your identity is really about what matters to you. It's about operationalizing your values. Mm. And that's why when I start with someone, let's say they come with something very specific, like this problem with my son, I'm going to do a values assessment first. I want to know who they're being. I want to know what their identity is in the world, in their family, with her son. Who is she being? Because that is where, if you are able to make changes and transformations on the level of identity, for example, if your identity is that of someone who is impulsive and loses their temper, it doesn't matter how many strategies I give you for, you know, keeping that temper in check. Yeah. Your identity will win over time.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go way up there to identity and mindset. Find out through mindset what you're thinking, why you are behaving a certain way, go up to identity and help you literally become a person who is patient. Mm-hmm. Literally become a different kind of person, a person who is not reactive, a person who is responsive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as you can see, this work is not easy, and it's for, but it is completely doable for people who are fed up with being this the way they've been, mm-hmm. who really are just like, okay, this is not working for me. I'm 35, I'm 45, I'm 55, whatever you are. Being this way is not working for me. And they have an inner, deep inner knowing that they themselves are getting in their own way. Right. And they want to remove that.
Mm. Wow. Yes.
And to answer your question, there is no place I go first, although with the values assessment, clearly we're looking at identity, but it's not linear. You know, I explain this framework. It's not a formula. It's a framework. I explain this framework to my client, and they know what we're doing. And in one session, we could, you know, be doing work around identity. And then, oops, I see a few mindset, you know, sort of landmines that need to be looked at. Mm-hmm. And then we might end with 10 minutes of pure strategy and tactics. Hey, do it this way. Why not that way? What do you think of this? I've seen, you know, this kind of strategy work well. We do that as well.
Yes. Yes. Wow. That's deep work and meaningful. I have to use that word too, because that creates meaning. And I think that's what we are looking for in a way, to make sense of this, this experience called life. So meaning is what comes to mind. We're almost at the end. Gosh, I know we said 30 minutes and then I'll talk to you forever here. But I would love to make a comment about, let's say, yes, this movement between beliefs and faith, trust, and then knowing, then knowledge. I remember going through all this process and within myself and trying to figure out if it was still a belief system, you know, implanted there from the very beginning of my life and my traumas and all that, or something else. And now I feel that I'm being guided by, my psyche has been guided by truth. That's what I'm looking for in all moments in my life. What is the truth here? Whatever is happening? When I have that moment of deep reflection, that's always my question. And then it seems like something in me asks for courage too. In a sense of to handle the truth, because that's another process. It's not easy. We ask for truth, but then we need to be prepared. to be able to see it and hopefully do something about it, or maybe not, even having the courage of staying where we are. So how do you feel about that, Caroline? There's this movement, this dance between beliefs, faith, trust, knowledge, / knowing, and then truth, courage.
You know, I have a problem. I shouldn't say problem, but I make a distinction between the truth and what is true for you. So when you are asking for the truth, I'm not sure a truth exists that is totally objective. However, I would replace the word truth, because I do the same sort of, for me, it's prayer is what it is. I'll call it what it is for me. I seek the same answers, but I call it clarity rather than truth. I just want some clarity. And Valeria, that really takes courage. Because people will say, they'll come to the work and I say, what do you want? And they'll say, clarity. And many of them don't have the courage to actually receive clarity. So I relate to that deeply as well. What I work on daily as a sort of an antidote to that fear is self-trust, which is not to say, which is different than confidence, which is different than belief. Self-trust is believing that whatever happens, okay, I trust myself to handle it. Whatever emotion comes up, I believe, I trust myself to be able to handle that emotion. No emotion is going to be too big. No situation is going to make me fall off a cliff and die, because that is what we feel like. We feel we don't want to feel the big emotions because we literally feel like we're going to die, you know? So working on this, expanding our capacity for the emotions, especially that in particular, we do not make allowances for. For me, it was humiliation, you know? For somebody else, it might be grief. For somebody else, it might be anger. You know, I literally had to put myself in humiliating situations to prove to myself that you're still here, Carolyn. You didn't die. You know? And so I would say self-trust is what comes to me as an antidote when you ask about, you know, this practice of asking for the truth and being courageous to receive it. Well, to be courageous, you need to feel that you can handle whatever it is that's coming your way. And it's 100% of the time, it's something emotional. It's a feeling. It's an emotion. It's not like, oh my God, I don't have the courage. Someone's going to walk in through the door and kill me. It's not a real thing. You know, it's an emotion that you're just not willing to leave, to trust yourself that you can handle.
I wisely said. Yes, I call that wisdom. It just sounds this way. It's beautiful, timeless wisdom to me. The power of self-trust. And hopefully that self is grounded in wholeness, right? As you have described earlier, that feeling of being complete, being whole, unlimited, and having this experience, which is limited, finite. So I always go back to that. My practices are spiritual. So I'm a student of Vedanta. So it goes really deep into that sense of wholeness. And from that, we are just well prepared, the psyche and the body. They're one, really. They're just more ready to receive and to give and to to just move around here and do what it does. But yes, I love the concept of self-trust because that's that makes sense to me. And also the when you talk about the truth, not being an objective for most of us, it's just my truth. I don't know. I do feel, yeah, you're right. I think it's we can only speak from our own perspective, that I have seen so many people who have been in touch with the so-called truth, that this experience is just an experience. Life here, it's a dreamlike experience, not a total, let's say it's not completely true or real. So that really resonates with me from my own practices too. And I always return to it because the people around me who resonate with that kind of truth, they also seem to live a very peaceful life. So it's very clear to me that. So maybe that's why I keep going back to their so-called truth. But thank you so much, Caroline, again, for sharing what you know to be true to you. And it feels to me like it's very spiritual, I have to say, as if you have been doing spiritual practices too, as I have. But I know it might be coming from a different place, but it's basically not, right? We are all spiritual beings anyway.
We are. Right. And it's totally spiritual.
Yes. Yeah. It feels that way. Very much feels that way. So before we say goodbye for today, would you like to add anything else, Caroline? I know in your bio, you talk about the game of life, which is was interesting to see. I made a note here.
Yes. Yes. And that's certainly for another podcast. But I would love if this what we've been talking about appeals to your listeners, I would love for them to check out my website. I have a journal section where I do weekly blogs on all these subjects we've been talking about, but going deeper. And I think that would be of value to people who are interested in, you know, creating a conscious life as your listeners are.
Yes.
And that's just my full name, carolynmaboubi.com.
Yes, I have the link here. Will be clickable on the podcast notes. I also have an Instagram handle. That'll be there too. Yes.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again. And before we say goodbye, I wanted to ask you one more question, if you don't mind. That would be the closing question. Definitely. What is your idea of freedom? What is freedom to you?
Time. Ideal freedom for me, and I have that in my life right now, is everything that is on my calendar is a 10 out of 10 in terms of importance, and the rest is white space. And that, when I wake up to that, I just feel like the freest soul in the whole world.
Yes. Wow. Wow, I didn't expect to hear that, that you're just speaking directly to me in a way. How interesting. And so many of us, millions of us, I'm sure. Thank you so much again, Caroline, for your presence in this, in our shared reality, for your courage to go deeper within yourself. And in greater courage to share that with others in an experiential way, and also in a verbal way as a message. But most of all, I want to thank you for being the message and not just the messenger. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Valeria. You make it easy. Thank you.
Oh, so are you. Bye for now, Caroline. Take good care.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk soon. Bye. Oh, my God.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Caroline Maboubi and her work, please visit carolynmaboubi.com.
To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.